Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
We bought another 3-2 pitch coming. Line drive, base hit center field. One run scores. Myers being held up. Astros take the lead on a Mauricio Dubon base hit to center.
Doobie, do it.
Doobie-doobie-doo.
I like that one better.
Is that from...
Scooby-Doo,
got it. You sounded like Scrappy there.
Oh, Scrappy. He was my guy.
You liked Scrappy?
I like Scrappy-Doo. You want to know why?
Why?
Short.
Oh, okay.
Short King. Scrappy-Doo.
I figured Scrappy was supposed to be a puppy.
Yeah. He's a small dog.
Maybe he's a dwarf dog. I don't know. The smallest German Shepherd, an abnormally large head.
Yes.
We're talking Hanna-Barbera here. Welcome to the Gallant and George radio program. It is Thursday, August 15th of 2024. After the second hit of the game for the Houston Astros, they get to a season best 10 games over 500 after a season-long 8-game winning streak, the longest current winning streak in baseball, to go a season best 2.5 games up in the American League West. Get chesty and let the good times roll, my friends.
I'll take it however you can get it. Two hits, one hit, all that matters is to get a win. I think last time this happened was 2017. I saw Chandler say that, in which the Astros only got two hits but also won a game. Yeah, September 5th, 2017 against the Seattle Mariners. So it's something that doesn't happen very often. But right now, you take it however you can get it. You continue this win streak. A good performance from Ronald Blanco, like, bounces back in a big way, I think, in this start.
Almost died. Survived.
Yeah, I'm skeptical. But
the x-rays are negative. He had a ball come back at him very hard.
So were Kyle Tucker's.
And that is a fair point.
That's me, negative Nancy, to start the show here. But like,
the comebacker grazed his index finger, which hand we don't know, but x-rays were negative. Hopefully he did not suffer a bone bruise. I'm more glad, Joe, that that did not hit his head. But at least the low pitch count for this game was for precautionary reasons.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He got through. You had a moment where Taylor Scott came in. Probably needs a bullpen promotion. We talked about that yesterday. Gets the Astros out of a jam. You saw Josh Hader pitch for not just the second straight game, but for two innings. You liked what you saw there. A Jeremy Pena home run, and to what you said a little bit before, I thought it was pretty crazy that the Astros, the last time they had won a game where they had just two hits, was before they'd ever won a World Series. It was Justin Verlander's first start.
Yeah, that's and Justin's got two of these then, because he's got that start, and then what? I guess it wasn't only two hits, but he had the game, the home, where there was only the one run and then no hitter from Toro. So I guess that was, they probably had more than two hits in that game. They just didn't do anything with it. Yeah, I mean, look, baseball is a weird sport. You could have 15 hits and lose a game. You can have two hits and win a game. Yeah, I prefer 15 as well.
But that's true. I mean, the offense had been hitting super hot in the last two games. They've come back to earth a little bit. And I mean, part of that has to do with the fact that, oh boy, Chaz McCormick, my God. I mean, we were mad about him playing before yesterday's game. Chaz McCormick, lost cause at this point.
Yeah, he is the most of all the things that are going great with the Astros right now. Because as you started the show and ran through it, 10 games above 500, 2.5 games above in first place. But Chaz is just...
He's lost.
He's real lost.
Send him to West Palm Beach, I said in quotation marks. Not because I'm implying killing him. No, I'm not doing that. Stop. Stop with the implications, you people. Okay? I'm saying... He needs to go to West Palm Beach to figure himself out. Did Jose Abreu do that when he went to West Palm Beach? No. I think that's where Rafael Montero is right now. Will he figure himself out? Probably not. Can Chaz McCormick figure himself out? Well, if he finds himself a delectable banana pudding shack, perhaps.
We just need to find one like and make some deliveries to Tampa Bay. Or I guess now Chicago. I'll ask some friends for some recommendations. I'll DM Chaz.
Got the best banana pudding in Chicago.
Yeah, but like, hey man, just go, you know, go load up, feel better for this series. It is the White Sox.
Who's the banana pudding king of Chicago?
That's a great question.
Keenan Allen?
Maybe.
Because he gained 20 pounds and they did not talk about that on Hard Knocks, which I watched this morning.
Yeah,
it's a boring episode.
It was one of the most boring episodes of Hard Knocks that ever existed.
I mean, the good side of that for your Bears is that it was boring, Joe, so that means that things are going well.
I don't know. I thought it was boring and there were some good stories to tell and they just ignored
gotcha.
Them all.
Okay.
But yeah, Chaz is just, he's lost. There's no other way to put it. And it's to the point where I don't think it's going to get found this year. Like, yeah, could you send him to Sugarland and try to figure it out? Yes. I don't think you can do that till Kyle Tucker comes back though. So it puts you in this weird spot where like you're waiting for Tucker. Rehab is going so slow. He will come back at some point this year, it seems. But by the time he comes back, the conversations with Chaz is probably just, well, he's just off the 26-man playoff roster.
Right, yeah. Also concerning, you know, we talked about Ronel Blanco and him getting pulled after his finger got hit. I mean, Jake Myers hit a ball off his shin.
He did.
So we'll see if there's a bone bruise there.
I hope not.
And my God, Pedro León, I'm out. I'm just out.
Oh yeah.
Okay. It's one thing when you lose it in the Trop roof. Okay, it's a historic ballpark with so many just little beautiful imperfections that make it so unique. But dude, slide.
Yeah, that's what's gonna save Chaz from going to Sugarland. Is Pedro León's probably coming, probably going back.
Yeah.
See who here was on the Twitch. Todd the Show. DiCenzo sure doesn't look very good at first base. No, he does not either. He does not look like a quality first baseman at this point either. So even though he won yesterday, between Chaz, DiCenzo's defense, Ronel getting hit in the finger, and then Pedro León just doing that, there was some negative things, but Pedro León, I think, was the worst of them all.
Yeah, that was bad. That was bad. Chaz was bad, but it doesn't matter because all the things are good. Let the good times roll. Get chesty, baby. 10 games above 500. And on top of that, the Mariners lost again to the Detroit Tigers. A.J. Hinch is 4-1 against the Mariners this year.
Let's go. A.J. Hinch still works for the Astros.
Basically, undercover. I don't know what the hell is going on with the Mariners because I figured they'd figured things out, but the Astros now have a season best 2.5 game lead. We'll talk more about how big the Astros can make this lead before the end of the year. I am probably going to demand a sweep tomorrow. You are playing the White Sox at Minute Maid. I mean, this is one of those series where theoretically, I know that last series was a little dicey, especially with that first game and then the second game where you lose the first game and the second game, you need all sorts of help to actually win that thing, but it maybe jump-started your season. But yeah, I think I'm going to demand a sweep against the White Sox. You should be able to get tanked off of the El Tiempo margaritas in center field or down the third baseline with a little Breggy sauce for $300 a pop and still beat the White Sox.
Yeah, and that'd be a good time for Chaz McCormick to figure it out against the White Sox. Like, I know that, and yes, Junior Bronco, I can't read. I said the Astros were going to be in Chicago. They're not. They're here. Garrett Crochet's on the mound on Friday. Like, it's obviously a very good pitcher, but besides that, Flexen and Bush, like, they're fine, but or can be terrible at the same time. They're a roller coaster of pitchers. So this would be nice if, you know, Chaz McCormick could use this weekend to figure something out. a little bit, you're playing the worst team in baseball. You're playing one of the worst teams historically. Demanding a sweep, expecting a sweep? Like, I don't even know if it's demanding. I think we should just expect it. The White Sox are awful.
I will not expect anything. I will not expect anything. I will demand it, okay? Baseball, as you said, Joe, it's a crazy sport.
I know, but they've lost 93 games this year.
True.
They did beat the Yankees once in this last series. You know, that doesn't mean a lot. So I wouldn't expect. I think demanding a sweep is perfectly fine this weekend, but I would say I expect it. I think, but earlier in the week when we talked about it, we said 5-1 over this 6-game stretch this week when you're playing the Rays, who you'd already dominated, now you swept them, and you play the White Sox. And this is just, as the Mariners struggle, and they're in action now against Detroit again, you have to take advantage if you're going to really start to widen this gap, where if the Mariners are going to falter, you have to beat the teams that you're supposed to. I mean, and this is something we saw with the Astros in the past, where, you know, last year, they could have more easily won the division, but they struggled against teams like the A's at the end of the season and the Angels for absolutely no reason. Just take care of your business and destroy the Chicago White Sox this weekend.
From the 747 HRNP listener line, you guys have a weak division. You guys are taking advantage of a weak schedule. You have the White Sox coming in. You guys are playing nobodies. You're happy you're winning against them. Beat some real teams, then we can talk. I'm wondering where this fan is from.
It's Key from L.A.
Okay.
So.
He didn't sign his name there because he knew.
No, yeah, I just did a quick little search in the text line to see who it was.
They would take some strays in response to that. I mean, couldn't we say that the Dodgers win a World Series that isn't in a bubble with one of your super spreaders?
Yes.
Which, you know, in California, you're supposed to be put to death if you ever go outside with the COVID, with the big C.
And look, and here's the thing, like, yes.
Death.
It is a good thing they beat bad teams.
Justin Turner,
but
bro.
Just a reminder, they swept the Baltimore Orioles not that long ago. And, you know, like, yeah. That is a team that is one of the best teams in baseball this year. And I don't know, didn't they just win 2 out of 3 games? Against the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This last month? So they have been beating good teams. Yes, they are taking advantage of a weak stretch in the schedule. It doesn't matter. That's what you're supposed to do.
They have a tough stretch coming up, but they are taking care of business. And, I mean, even the biggest Astros hater out there, whether you be a Mariners fan or a Rangers fan or a Yankees fan or a Dodgers fan, you have to admit, this turnaround's been very impressive. They have the best record in baseball since April 27th. And I read that text as insecurity with all the you guys. And it makes me feel better about the Astros. I feel like a lot of people are starting to take notice. Maybe not enough for my liking. And I think tomorrow we'll do a segment, Joe, where we take the temperature of what everybody else is saying about the Houston Astros right now. But this has been an incredible turnaround. Joe Espada deserves credit. The Astros hitters who have been carrying things deserve credit. Bregman, Yiner Diaz, Yordan Alvarez, their pitching staff, which has been held together by rubber bands and duct tape, deserve credit. It's been great. Be happy. Be pumped. We'll see if it keeps happening. I hope it keeps happening. And it stands to reason these next 3 games against the White Sox, it will keep happening. He's
without
Joe.
Oh. Sorry, I said without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Say it more chesty.
Without a doubt.
There we go. There we go. Do we do it? Up next, he's Joe. I'm Paul. Sean behind the glass. Did the Houston Texans miss out on an opportunity to improve their roster yesterday? Because they certainly tried from the sound of things. What are we talking about? You'll find out next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
A couple of texts. We're talking about how your Astros are doing things they haven't done this year. Season best 10 games above 500, season long 8-game winning streak, season best 2.5-game lead in the American League West. We had a Dodgers fan, Key from LA, text in, and it reeked of insecurity. From the 832, a texter says, "Piss on you, Dodger fan." Easy, yes. R. Kelly.
Oh, come on.
From the 281.
Oh, that was mean, Paul.
Well, hang on. We're talking about pissing on you.
I know.
Some people are into that, I guess. From the 281, taking care of business without Tucker and Verlander, too. Correct? Mm-hmm. Verlander is making his second and hopefully final rehab start tonight for your Sugarland Space Cowboys. And from the 281, this is a bit true. The Astros don't play well against sub-500 teams, especially way below 500. This person then says, "Go Twins!" I don't know why this person from the 281 is a Twins fan. Seems like they are. But hey, we respect your fanhood, sir, because yes. Carlos Correa is there, and we like him. Well, maybe at least I like him.
Maybe that's why. He just followed.
He left Carlos. The Astros for
He's
the
like,
Twins.
I'm not an Astros fan. I'm a Carlos Correa fan.
I'm a Daniela stan
mm-hmm.
on social media.
Mm-hmm.
There's another word for that. And I am a Carlos Correa fan.
Yep. That would make more sense, but you never know.
The New England Patriots have traded Matthew Judon, their best pass rusher and their best player, to the Atlanta Falcons, and they didn't do it for much. They traded him to Atlanta for a third-round pick next year. Judon had been practicing with the Patriots, but had also taken an absence from the team, and there was a clip that went viral of him and new head coach Gerard Mayo getting into a shouting match. No new contract for Matthew Judon with Atlanta yet. He's scheduled to earn $6.5 million this year. He clearly wanted more. Turned 32 last week. Four-time Pro Bowler. Career-high 15.5 sacks in 2022. 12.5 sacks in 2021. Missed most of last year with a torn biceps. I bring that up, especially considering that we've talked about how the Houston Texans pass rush looks loaded, because per Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, while the Bears were heavily involved in Matthew Judon trade talks, the Texans also showed some interest, I'm told. The Patriots had a healthy market for him, ultimately leading to a Falcons deal. How healthy of a market is it, number one, if it only took a third-round pick to get Matthew Judon? And number two, if it only took a third-round pick to get Matthew Judon, did the Houston Texans, who at the very least were sniffing around and clearly are showing, given the Stephon Diggs trade happened, that they are pushing all of their chips into the middle of the table for this season, miss out in not trading for him?
I don't know. This is an interesting one, because the third-round pick, and you know, I saw people kind of going over what Judon's contract means for the Falcons, that if they can't re-sign him during the season and he leaves in free agency, they would even get a compensatory third-round pick in 2026.
Right.
So it's like you could essentially just trade him for nothing except for the production you get on the field for him. I guess the Texans missed out. I guess I'm more just surprised, Paul, that they were even interested in someone of this caliber. Like, what the Atlanta Falcons are doing is they are saying, we are in a weak division, and we are going to take advantage of some veteran moves. They just traded for Matthew Judon, as we're talking about. They're about to sign Justin Simmons, it appears. So they're going all in with their veterans to add to the defense, as they've brought in Kirk Cousins. And like, there's a reason why they're the favorites to win the NFC South this year, because all the moves they've made.
And that division sucks.
But for the Texans, I was surprised to hear that they were in the market at all for someone of Judon's quality. It's not what I would have expected to hear at this point in the offseason.
And it may be as simple as they were just doing their due diligence. They made a phone call. Nick Caserio was with the New England Patriots not too long ago. I don't know if they had conversations back in the day. I know that Judon's been with the Patriots, I want to say, for the last three seasons.
Yeah, three seasons, yeah.
So probably not any conversations between the two. I wonder if this is as simple as just making a phone call and the Falcons are making this public because they want to seem like they're doing a good job. There is a little desperation to what the Falcons are doing. I feel like Terry Fontenot, especially after the Michael Penix draft pick, after signing Kirk Cousins in the offseason, is probably trying to make Arthur Blank impressed. So there's an element of that here. But they have a ton of depth at the pass rushing spots. I feel like it would be unlikely for the Texans to trade for Judon and then give him an extension. And maybe that's, Joe, why they pressed the pause button, because Judon's going to want a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Texans supposedly have about a little north of $22 million in cap space as things currently stand, and they can free up some more with some cuts and things. So you could theoretically give Judon an extension, but everything that we have seen from the Houston Texans in the Nick Caserio era is that they are not willing to give guys contracts that are longer than 3 years. Laremy Tunsil's about as long as they are willing to go. And I bet that Judon at 32 is probably looking for a little bit more than that. And on top of that, a pretty high annual salary. I think the Texans could make it happen in the short term. I don't know if in the long term they'd be able to make it happen. But it is noteworthy that they, at the very least, picked up the phone and made a phone call, reportedly.
Yeah, because for the long term, what you've already locked up Daniil Hunter for 2 years. Autry has got a 3-year contract, I believe, as well. Will Anderson's obviously under his rookie deal. So you've invested in pieces on the edge specifically for him. I mean, this is definitely more screams luxury than necessity.
But they're doing that. I mean, look at the wide receiver room. They got a ton of wide receivers. They got a ton of pass rushers. I don't think it can ever hurt to have too many pass rushers. Too many wide receivers, we'll see. Too many pass rushers doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't, because they're going to get hurt, and plus you can just constantly be bringing them in a rotation. You can do things creatively. I mean, Daniil Hunter is such a monster. You can move him inside, theoretically, if you wanted to for plays here and there, you know, on a third and long when you want to go after. You could put all these guys on the field in some combination at once. So I like that they're still doing their due diligence at this point. I'm surprised that a player of this caliber is who they were talking to. I wonder if they had some inside information about what Judon is expecting from his new team, and that would have made it more challenging to make the deal.
I think that's likely, and especially after seeing what's going on with Hassan Reddick and the Jets, where Hassan Reddick, after getting traded from the Eagles to the Jets this offseason, is demanding a trade after, I think, accruing nearly $2 million in fines by skipping out on all practices. You do not want to have that happen to you. I feel like there's a very good chance it could happen to the Falcons. I think the Falcons are showing that they are run by morons this offseason. I think it's hilarious that they passed on Bill Belichick. Good luck.
Because they want someone with too much control, too much power.
Someone needs control there. I feel like right now the way that they are operating is to, what, get a 10-win season and win the NFC South? You're going Bill O'Brien here? NFC South champions, doesn't matter.
Yeah, Bill Belichick would have been a much better hire for the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, the whole, like what you're saying, the whole Kirk Cousins Penix thing is bizarre. It feels like there's like two separate people running that organization, that the owner probably wanted the fancy, expensive quarterback, and the player and the GM probably wanted the young rookie to develop. Well, they went with both. We'll see how that works out for you. But this is, I do like the move for the Falcons, to be honest. I mean, I don't view them as a Super Bowl contender, but they're a real playoff contender, especially in the NFC. So I like this move. I like the fact that the Texans were involved. D'Amico Ryans is meeting with the media right now, and he was asked about interest in the edge position. And he said, good football players, that's what I'm looking for. Something we continue to evaluate. That's our job, to improve our team. So super generic answer, but didn't deny it.
Didn't confirm it either. I mean that's just D'Amico. Where is this quote?
Aaron Wilson.
Aaron Wilson tweeted that out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sean, I think we have to pick a voice.
Yeah, that's true, because that's what we do now with any D'Amico Ryan sound.
I'm not sure which one I want.
Yeah, let's just hear Paul say it today.
Paul's pick.
Tucker Paulson.
What is happening? What is going on? The Falcons traded for Matthew Judon? You're asking me about that? Good football players, that's what I'm looking for. Something we continue to evaluate. That's our job, to improve our team. In Joe Biden's America, we could improve our country by building a wall on the border. What is happening? What is going on? Not that. Not that. That's all I got.
That's good. That's perfect. Exactly what we needed, Paul. We asked, you delivered.
Mm.
But yeah, do you want the Texans to go trade for a pass rusher?
No.
Like, is
no,
there...
I didn't want them to trade for Diggs. I mean, you know, I'm happy they traded for Diggs, I guess, because in camp this week, it's Stroud and Diggs some more. They seem to have a great combination. But at the same time, you don't always need to go all in. I know that the Madden players out there, giant pants dance over this. And the youths online who believe you can just go get everybody, pants tent for this as well. The idea of the Texans trading for Matthew Judon. They didn't need to do it. I think it's interesting that they thought about it, and it's on brand with just what they've been doing this offseason, which is aggressively building up the roster while their quarterback is on a rookie contract, which every football nerd in the football cognoscenti believes is something you must do if you stumble into a great quarterback.
Yeah, and like when you think about the draft, I don't know how – I'm not anti-trading draft capital. You have six picks next year, so if they want to make a move, I would still much rather it be for a corner or a safety at this point, or as we kind of talked about with DJ on Tuesday when he was in studio with us, using a mid-round to late-round pick to acquire a veteran, you know, backup swing tackle at this point or guard. Even for this team.
Offensive line depth, and yeah. I'm coming around to that. Look, the corner position, it is certainly shallow. One Derek Stingley Jr. injury away from being, I think, an absolute train wreck. So that's probably where I'd prioritize it, too. Stephon Gilmore still out there.
Yeah, we're still waiting for Gilmore to sign mm-hmm. somewhere. Like last word was like the Saints were interested
yeah,
in
the Saints
him,
were the last parent.
But he hasn't signed anything official yet. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's moves to be made. Pass rusher's not one of them, but I like the idea that the Texans are just kind of kicking it around.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. If you think the Texans made a mistake by not trading for Matthew Judon, 713-780-3776 to call to text. Only took a third-round pick, though it does seem like the Falcons have to give him an extension. Also, if you want, you can talk about the Astros, who are in the midst of an eight-game winning streak and a season-best 2.5 games ahead of the American League West second-place team, the Seattle Mariners. How much bigger can they make that lead? All of those things on the table. Plus, you're going to hear from a Texans hater next, a battle red pill. It's Gallant and George. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
Heretics dare to question the Houston Texans' greatness.
How dare you?
Is it bullshit?
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong.
Or will you take this battle red pill?
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Astros 8 straight wins, their 9-1 road trip. Being 2.5 games up in the AL West, season best number for many, many, many different stats. That's still on the table, but I felt the need to share something that we saw courtesy of one of the most opinionated NFL pundits that there is. His name is Pete Prisco. He works for CBS Sports and has some of the biggest calves I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Shout out to him. Shout out to people who can build big calves. I wish I could, just like Johnny Drama on Entourage. I have thought about calf implants before. They're a tad cost prohibitive. Anyway, to bring it back to Pete Prisco, here's Pete and his prediction for the Houston Texans in 2024. Doesn't seem like he buys in.
Well, he wasn't good for the Bills in the last couple of years, and he wasn't good on the football field the last 10 games of the season last year. If you go look at his numbers, they were below average, to be honest with you. And being in Buffalo last week, or Rochester, when I talked to the Bills, I can tell you they're not too sad that he's gone. And, you know, look, he's going on a one-year deal, so he's probably going to be on his best behavior with the Texans and try and get a long-term contract. He turns 31 in November. That's old for an NFL wide receiver, so you got to be careful with that. I just don't know how this team's going to handle being the hunted. You know, last year they surprised a lot of people. And C.J. Stroud's, you know, if he has the same type of season he had last year, he's on his way to being truly special. But that's a bit, you know, we don't know if he can. Sometimes second-year quarterbacks fall back a little bit. I don't think he will. But I think this schedule is brutal this year. You play the first-place schedule. You play a tough division. I just think it's going to be tough to navigate. I don't see them getting past 9 wins. I got them at 9-8.
Let's go through these one at a time. Stephon Diggs, bad addition to the Houston Texans? Right now, not the case.
I am curious about what happens, Joe, if this team runs into troubled waters.
Yes. We haven't really had a chance to talk. We haven't talked about it too much, but there's the video from the preseason game where Stephon and CJ are, like, they're having, like, a very, like, looks animated in a way, but I think to me it's clear Stephon Diggs is just explaining to CJ Stroud, like, what was going on in the play and why it was open, and everyone made a huge deal about it on social media.
Was this today?
No, it was during the preseason
game. Oh, during the preseason, yeah.
I
don't even remember that.
Diggs is just going to attract negativity. I don't think he's a bad addition. I think if you're going to try to claim, like Pete Prisco did, that Stephon Diggs was not good in Buffalo, like, you're just lying.
You gotta watch the first games of the year where he looked great. The offense changed in the middle of the year because it wasn't working, and there is definitely an element of maybe the Bills were trying to force the ball to Stephon Diggs a little bit too much. They move away from it, they run the football more, and they win all those games to wrap up the year. Does that mean Diggs is washed? No. Based off of every conversation that we've had with people that were actually close to the situation, the guy was still working hard at practice. And if you've watched practice, Diggs has looked very good there.
Okay, like, and I think this is, like, a fair point for Junior Bronco here. Diggs' best football is definitely behind him. That can be true. But also it can be true that he can still be very good for the Houston Texans in 2024.
I don't see how Diggs is a detriment, is more my point. I don't think he was necessary, to be honest. I felt like, hey, you go get another wide receiver. CJ Stroud's going to elevate the wide receivers around him. But they found a way to make it work from a cap perspective. And since Stroud's on a rookie contract, go for it. I don't see how it hurts the Texans. And Prisco sounds like there he believes it'll hurt them. The next thing, the Texans being the hunted. This is going to be completely uncharted territory for them on that front. I feel with D'Amico Ryans and everything that he has been saying, avoiding the rat poison and all that, it's going to help. But it's young guys on this team. It's Gen Z. It's hard to ignore all of the fluffing by pundits.
Yes, but I thought DJ, when he was here with us on Tuesday, brought up a very excellent point. That when you look at what they did this offseason, not only did they acquire veterans, a lot of these veterans have long playoff runs and have been part of the hunted category, whether it's Joe Mixon or Stephon Diggs or even Foley Fatukasi, like guys who have played in AFC championship games and have won playoff games or played in Super Bowls. Like there are guys on this roster that they've brought in that do have that experience. Does it balance out the young Gen Z guys? Not totally. Like, it's definitely, the proportions definitely way off. There's way more young guys who, like, are not used to this than there are guys who have some experience. But your head coach also is the most important person to this equation here for me. And he is a guy that when he was the defensive coordinator for the 49ers and on the 49ers staff, they are the team that is the hunted in the NFC. So I think you can overcome that. I don't view this as a major, like, red flag for the Texans. Partially of all, to be honest, like, I also don't totally believe in it. I think that's oftentimes, to be honest, it's a cliche that is used about a team that has success, that it's going to blow up in their face next year because they're not used to the pressure.
Devil's advocate argument. We've seen it happen before.
True.
I don't know if it's this team, though. I don't know if a team quarterback by C.J. Stroud qualifies as that. The last team would be Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Baker Mayfield under center. No offense to Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield not on C.J. Stroud's level from a talent perspective. But that is something that is really hard to define at this moment in time. Is being the hunted going to hurt them? The schedule, as Pete said, will hurt them. And I don't hate 9-8 as a prediction. I think 9-8 is totally within the realm of possibility.
Are they, like, really the hunted? Like, besides in their own division? I know the national media and we and everyone are very excited for the Houston Texans and what they did this offseason, what we saw last year in 2024. But you still have the Bills, you still have the Chiefs. Like, are they the most hunted team in the NFL? No, but like you, I also think 9-8 is a fair prediction. It's a brutal, brutal schedule. If you do not take advantage of this, of the games that are obvious to win, then it's going to be challenging. When they put up the graphic for Pete Prisco here, like, he has week one, loss to the Colts. Those are things that are going to puts you closer to 9-8 because of how hard your schedule is.
Has Pete Prisco red-pilled you in any way? Has he made you see through all of the hype of the Houston Texans with that clip right there? I say no.
I say no. I
did not red pill me. I'm still taking my deep steel blue pill.
Yeah, me too. Like I still don't. I'm not gonna. When we do our video prediction thing like we did last year when Paul got it correct and was the only one at the station, I'm not gonna put them at 9 wins. I'm gonna put them in double digit wins in 2024. I still believe, but I hear him. But no, he didn't red pill me.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Nothing he really said was like an indictment of the actual quality of the team. Like, if you really listen to it, it's like, well, Stephon Diggs, attitude stuff, and the schedule's hard, and they have to be the hunted, and C.J. Stroud might have a sophomore slump. Even though every time someone brings up sophomore slump with C.J. Stroud, they always immediately follow with, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's like, well, thanks for saying it then. Yeah, thanks for saying it then. But, yeah, I think a lot of those things don't really, it doesn't speak to how good the team is, or it doesn't speak to an eye to any shortcomings this team has. It's literally just saying, like, winning in the NFL is hard. It's like, yeah, sure is, Pete Prisco. Thanks, Pete.
I like Pete, though.
I know.
I do, too.
I love his – it's not a bit because he's, like, I think authentic with it of how high he is on the Jags at all times.
Every single year.
Every year he's like, I don't see how they don't get 13 wins.
I think before the Texans-Jaguars game, one of them this year, we have to bring on Pete.
Okay, yeah, we can try it.
Most overrated part of the Houston Texans. Let's do this on the other side. This is a conversation that we almost had yesterday because we have been hyping them up a lot. Pete Prisco has not red-pilled us, but that's on the table. How you're feeling about the Houston Astros going forward? They're in the midst of their longest winning streak of the year. They have the best record in baseball since mid-April. And on top of that, they're 2.5 games up in the AL West. How much bigger can they make that lead? We'll talk about that in detail at 1 o'clock. But next, the most overrated part of the Houston Texans. And we'll take a look around the AFC South because there's some funny stories, including one not involving Pete Prisco's Jaguars, more so involving the Tennessee Titans and the Indianapolis Colts. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Astros in the midst of their best winning streak of the year, 8 games. At the best record of the year, 10 games above 500. And lead the American League West by 2.5 games, the most they have all year. Wrapped up a 8-1 road trip with a 2-1 win over the Rays yesterday where they had just 2 hits. Best record in baseball since April 27th. We'll talk about their schedule going forward compared to the Mariners in the next segment. But, Joe, the Houston Texans are getting a lot of hype going into this year. We just heard from Pete Prisco in the last segment. He did not battle red pill us into believing the Texans have insurmountable warts that they're never going to cure. What's the most overrated part of the Houston Texans going into this season?
I think it has to be running back. Like even the names are there. You have Joe Mixon. You have Damian Pierce, who we all loved his rookie year and thought he was super impressive.
But you don't seem into...
I'm not as into him. And I think when you look at Joe Mixon's advanced stuff, it's like his game, he is slowing down quite a bit. So I think because of the name value that is there, kind of the fantasy football culture and a little bit as well of like Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce and what those guys
have done
once
before.
Were like
Cam that, Akers is there too.
Yeah. You know, if you look at, you know, if you play the new Madden, Joe Mixon's going to have a crazy high rating versus what he actually may do on the field. So I would say the running back room is at this point the most overrated position. And part of that's maybe they just can't overcome the struggles of the offensive line with the run game. But I say running back.
Running back. Okay. I feel like the offensive line is certainly
not going to help that running back group out based off of what we've seen to this point. So I think that's a good one, Joe. This is a tough one. I feel like the wide receiver group has been hyped so much it cannot possibly meet this hype. You have three great wide receivers. You have three. Now, should it open everything up? Yes, it should. But we are looking at that wide receiver group with Diggs, with Nico Collins, with Tank Dell as the best wide receiver group in the National Football League 1-3, right?
Yeah, they're up there.
What are the odds that it is, at the end of the year, the best wide receiver group in the NFL? This is not me saying any of these guys stink. This is me saying, what are the odds of them making good on that?
Yeah,
it's a very, very lofty standard, and there are a lot of good teams with wide receiver groups in the league, and are we going to feel this way about every single one of those wide receivers at the end of the year? I think Nico Collins has an incredible array of talent. Top to bottom of everybody on this roster at wide receiver, he's got the most because of the size, the speed, the ability to run after the catch. Tank Dell, playmaker. Stephon Diggs gets open. You add all three of that together. Oh, my God. But is it going to be as good as everyone thinks it's going to be?
That's really interesting, Paul. I didn't think of it that way, but like Jonathan Alexander, like a month ago, wrote an article about the Texans having three 1,000-yard receivers.
Yeah.
Like, could they make history and I think be one of the first teams, if not the first team, to do that? You're putting them in a category that it's such a high bar before the season to reach that it's almost without them all being three 1,000-yard receivers and possibly winning a Super Bowl and being close to all having double-digit touchdowns, it's how do you pass expectations for the wide receivers to what they are right now? Yeah, that's good. I think we took two different angles of this. We're like, I want more face value. You want expectations. If you go based on expectations for the position, we will view them as the most overrated position on this team this year. Because there's no way, you're right, there's no way they're going to meet those expectations.
And add another layer to it. You got Noah Brown as your fourth wide receiver, who's also really good. And you have Robert Woods, who might not even make the team. You got John Metchie, who's a former second-round pick. And everyone is getting a deep steel blue pill induced hard-on for, one, Dalton Schultz, and two, Cade Stover. People were talking about Cade Stover like he's already going to be the best tight end on this team. Because of one preseason game and a couple of practices and because of a couple of fluffy quotes that are being said in the offseason. So that has a little bit of an extra level to it. Is this the greatest receiving core in NFL history? Some are talking about it from that perspective. And to your point about the 3,000-yard wide receiver thing, that is not going to happen. I will be blown away if it happens. If they do get 3,000-yard wide receivers, okay, I guess it does live up to the hype. Yards are stupid, by the way. I hate that we care about them as much as we do. But it's just a lot of hype that they got to meet.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
No, I think you're right. Because even if they got the yards, but they finished 8-9, does it matter? Like, does it really matter if they all catch for 1,000 yards this season, but the Texans don't win 10-plus games and they miss the playoffs? It doesn't matter. So I'm with that, too. Yeah, I think that's a good answer. I like this a lot because it's going to be just challenging to meet the expectations.
Yeah.
Of what it was.
I still think they're going to be good. It's the expectations from the 409. They can still be a top 3 to 5 wide receiver group in ball, 100%. I'm not saying they're going to suck. I just think there are such high expectations being put on them. What happens if Todd the Show brought up that Stephon Diggs has some drops? Yeah, he had a huge drop against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Or some of the Super Bowl, the Bills Super Bowl. Because, of course, they can't get past the second round or beat the Chiefs. But he had a huge drop in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when any of these guys have a slight mess up? People are going to get irrationally mad because the expectations is that this group is perfect.
Yeah, and they're not going to be. And there's going to be conversation inside and outside, maybe not inside the building, but outside the building the whole season. Every single time something happens with Diggs, Tank, or Nico on the sidelines with CJ, people are going to be asking the question about like how they're distributing the ball and who's getting the ball the right amount.
Diggs mad?
Yeah, Diggs mad. Like, My honest expectation for this year is that Nico Collins will have the least productive year of the three. Like what we're seeing from DJ Bieniemy and everyone that's with the Texans this week, since you haven't been able to go out there, is that Diggs is getting the most targets. He's getting 50, 60-yard touchdown catches. And there is a special connection with CJ and Tank to where maybe the yards won't be there, but I think the touchdowns will be. So, like, how does Nico handle not getting the ball all the time?
Yeah, I was thinking of it as something of from the perspective of fans who are going to draft one of these three guys on their fantasy football team. And when because you have three awesome receivers, chances are there's going to be a 2-3 game stretch where one of these guys isn't giving you much numbers-wise, isn't giving you a ton of yards, isn't being found in the end zone. So I do think that there is a chance that there's going to be some basically backlash from the fans about, like, oh my God, Tank Dell's having a terrible year, when it's really, in reality, it's he's not putting up the same fantasy football numbers that he did last year. Or same thing with Collins or Diggs. But I think from that perspective too, like, it's going to be under such more of a microscope because all three of these guys are going to be probably starting for most fantasy teams every week. And in a given week, based on a matchup, they're probably not going to get the ball. One of the three, they're not all three going to have big games every single week.
Exactly. So
I'm taking none of them in fantasy football. Maybe Tank Dell. I'm not taking them.
I'm only taking Cade Stover.
Yeah.
Tight end one.
Sean's all in.
Stop, tight end one stop, for me.
Stop. TE one.
I was online just posting about it. I think he can be TD one.
Yeah, I know you guys are trolling me right now. I think the idea that every position group has like a QB one. Oh, the starting quarterback, wide receiver one, the guy who gets the ball the most. No, the guy who gets the ball the most is the guy who's open on an every play basis. And all of a sudden people are starting to do this with tight end. God, I hate the children. I hate the children covering my game. My game.
They're ruining Paul's game.
I am football. Everyone knows this. And all of a sudden we got all these stupid terms entering the vernacular from a bunch of dorks. I hate it. Who's going to be the tight end? What? How about shut up? No one cares. Win.
Who do you think is going to have the highest DVOA in the AFC South? I don't know if having a high one's good or not. Who's going to have the best DVOA?
Of all the teams?
Adjusted DVOA.
Well, you're asking who's the best team then, essentially.
Well, adjusted DVOA.
The best team based off of the metrics is what you're asking. But it's weird that we bring that in, too. Why not just ask, what's the best team? Well, per DVOA, it's this. Instead of, yeah, I don't know. I could call it that.
Per record. Let's go just per record.
Per win.
Per win.
Best team. Best team by wins.
Best team.
You're gone for 2.5 years, and you come back, and you see the people who are, like, now the experts talking about this team, and I get frustrated. I get very frustrated. I put myself up pound for pound with anybody talking about this team, and I truly don't understand some of the people that have, like, all of a sudden just, like, entered the conversation. Who's going to be the tight end? Shut up. No one cares. No one cares. Wide receiver one. No one cares. God, win the game. Jeez. Anyway.
Is Cam Akers going to get a lot of
Cam Akers might not even make the team. Ooh, Cam Akers.
So I shouldn't draft him.
Good catching checkdowns. He looks good. Ooh, you know what? Maybe he's better than Damian Pierce. What? What are you talking about? He has no Achilles. What are you talking about?
He might. I mean, he has Achilles.
Well, are they his? Like, did they take him out of a cadaver?
They might just not work very well.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
It's probably not a late round.
I know.
Pro.
I know what these two mother bleepers are doing.
Whoa, whoa. I said one comment.
No,
he started it.
You joined in. You joined
in. He started it.
You're happy to
join. This is Sean's fault.
Joe, I don't like it when we don't bully you and when you guys bully me. Okay, which is like perfect.
You know what?
Perfect right. Bully. Where right. he can't handle.
We gotta flip this. We gotta bully Sean.
No. You honestly, I always can tell when you're trying to rile me up, Sean. I always know. I always
he's got
know.
This huge ass smile on his face, like it's like he's got the worst poker face I've ever seen.
Because he knows, like it's, but he knows that even with it being the worst poker face,
I don't have to hide it.
Like, I'm an idiot.
I had to say the words, Cade Stover, tight end one.
I'm like a dog with a piece of meat. Like I'm just, you know, eyes roll back into back of my head like I'm a great white shark. Look over and roll over and look at your big black eyes like a doll's eyes.
Add that to the list of D'Amico.
Oh, yeah.
Quinn from Jaws.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That one's a tough one. Well, let me be Spanish ladies. One last thought, because we do the Deep Steel Blue Pill segment all the time. So we had Mr. Brostash on Twitch yesterday claimed that his child got in trouble for singing Jeremy Pena after a home run. Another listener claimed, like, Paul, the deep steel pill segment, my child is asking me what that means. And I'm like, ah, damn. So I told him to show him the Matrix scene and say, like, the blue pill means that you stay in dreamland and the red pill means that you're out, you know? Don't tell them what the blue pill really does. We all know what it really does, okay? We all know. I don't have to I'm not going to share it in case little Timmy's listening.
Well, he's going to find out during the MLB playoffs watching Frank Thomas push those pills on us. So he's going to find out eventually.
Good point.
Joe to my right, Sean behind the glass. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Up next, how much better can the Astros make their AL West lead realistically over the next couple of weeks? And by the end of the year, we'll discuss. Stick around.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All on mine, shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call pound 250 and say keyword care. That's care to pound 250.